Good morning, y'all.
All right, lively today.
No, we're on page 323, starting day 24.
Yes, beginning day 24. For those of you who are following on the book, we are on page 323, day 24. And for those of you who don't have a book, that's perfectly okay because we're still on day 24. So let's take a moment for unity's prayer of light. The light of God surrounds us, the love of God enfolds us, the power of God protects us, and the presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is, and all is well. Welcome back, Kim. I'm very much looking forward to getting into today's lesson. As we begin, I came across something that, as I was working on the talk I'm going to give a little bit later on, is that, and I think this is a point of confusion. I know it is for me, and so I'm presuming it probably is for some other people too, is that depending upon what state of consciousness I am in, depending upon what aspect of myself I am identifying with, that is going to either influence or basically define the reality that I see or that I perceive. And so many times where a lot of my confusion comes from is that I'm still approaching something with my, let's say, with my human limited self and expecting it to have the same kind of spiritual results that are being talked about, whereas really it's apples and oranges. I can't quite put those two things together. Margot pointed this quote out to me because it fits very much with what I'm talking about later on, but I think it fits with what I'm saying here. Is Eckhart Tolle said, "To offer no resistance to life is to be in a state of grace, of ease, of lightness." In other words, to be in the conscious reality of your divine self. Now, where a lot of confusion might come in, if I'm in, let's say, with my human self, is, okay, I'm on a Watterson Expressway and a truck is moving into my lane. Resist nothing. I'm in an abusive relationship. Should I stay? Or one of my favorites is, I'm on a diet and somebody puts a chocolate sundae in front of me. What we used to say back in the old brotherhood days, the best way to get rid of temptation is to give into it. Right? Okay, resist nothing. Okay. Now you see, most of that has to do with being in kind of my limited human consciousness. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do something about those things. In fact, we probably are called upon to do that. But we're asked to be able to do that from a consciousness that is higher than, I guess, our instincts. Okay? And for me, I keep working on the practice of sort of tuning in to where am I right now? What aspect of me am I identifying with? And see, if I happen to be in judgment or in any form of separateness, I am in my individual, limited ego thinking, my mind, okay? And for me, that I don't know about you guys, but that's kind of a continual thing. And I will keep working on that until I don't need to work on that anymore. Now that doesn't mean that, let's say there's a truck coming my way on the Watterson Expressway, I can move. I don't have to move out of fear, I can move out of the love of my life. They're two very different things, okay? And it's kind of like learning through joy or learning through pain. Okay. You know, I hear that so often, and I go, yeah, right, okay. But, you know, there are some things in our lives right now that we probably are beginning to realize that we are learning from, not necessarily through joy, but at least easier than we might have before. In other words, we don't have to get knocked over the head with a 2x4 to realize this is not the direction to go in. This is not what I need to be doing. Or this is not how I need to be doing it. We will talk about knowing for one more minute before we move on to the next lecture. The amount of time spent on knowing in this text is a prerequisite for the work that is to follow. When you are told something that is not your own experience, it remains in the realm of conjecture or opinion, and that is not how we wish you to incorporate the work of this text. How do you know you are in your knowing? How do you know someone loves you, even if they don't say it?
You feel it.
How do you know that God is present, even when you don't feel that? Kind of like, you know, footprints in the sand. I came across another line to that one, you know, where the guy's walking and sees two set of footprints, that's pretty obvious, and one set of footprints, well, that's when I'm carrying you. And the guy said, well, you know, I saw this other place where there was one set of footprints and there was sort of these parallel lines running along there. And Jesus said, that's when I dragged you, kicking and screaming. I it's funny, sometimes I don't, you know, it'd be nice to enjoy being carried sometimes. But sometimes still that's not the way I want to go, or not the lesson I want to learn. So when you are in your knowing, this is not definable by our thinking mind. That's again where some confusion comes in. I come back here to Sunday morning, and so do you. We come back here on Sunday morning because our knowing is reinforced. I might come here because I think I need something extra, blah, 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 whatever it is. But, you know, I think ultimately we arrive here or in places or in circumstances or in gatherings like this because our knowing of the truth and knowing of the truth of who we are is reinforced again. And I go, oh, okay, thank you. Not to me. Not to the universe necessarily, but even to yourself. Thank you. So when we talk about being in your knowing, your little ego mind is going, what the hell is he talking about, being in my knowing? Being in my knowing, what does that mean? And it's going to continually ask questions about that, and that's perfectly okay. That's what it does. But I'm encouraging all of us not to get tangled up in that one, right? Just say, stop. I do know that I know. I do know that I am loved. I do know that I am unconditionally loved. I do know of the presence of God. I do know there is such a thing as no separation. I do know that. I have experienced that. Maybe for a fleeting second. Okay? But see, the fleeting second is really out of time. We're measuring it with time, but that fleeting second of awareness, that, oh, that's timeless. It's out of time. And it is a knowing that wasn't just a split second of knowing, even though that's the way my little self defines that. It was a knowing that goes deeper or goes beyond the knowing of my thinking mind. That absolutely nothing can take away from, that nothing can change. Those of you who have hobbies or artistic abilities that you get involved in, whether it's music or painting or photography or gardening or anything like that, okay, know that there are occasions when we become so lost, and I use that word in a positive way, so lost in the activity that we are in or involved in that we lose all track of time. We're just totally in the experience. And we don't realize until later when we pop out of it how joyful that is.
So we're not saying, well, I'm really enjoyful right now.
I'm just in it. Now, no one can take that knowing away from you. It's always there. The work of this text is to benefit you on multiple levels of consciousness in order to bring about a transition in how you self-identify as an energy being, as an aspect of the Creator, and as the one who is in dominion of his experience on this material plane. As you believe this through those demonstrations you bring forth, the action of this work, you can have your own knowing, and your own knowing will bring to you the requirements in your experience to prove this for yourself. In other words, you will create circumstances that will either intensify or affirm a knowing that you already have. Okay. Kind of, Lord, that I may see, Lord, that I may see more deeply. And when I am open to that, things will come up. They might be memories, they might be thoughts, they might be ideas, they might be some external experience with another being in the outside world, but something will come up that will allow that knowing to be reinforced or to be enhanced. Okay. Again, the thinking mind will always be seeking out a reason for that or an explanation for that. And we're not denying that so much as we are suggesting don't get into a fight with it. Don't get into a struggle with it. Saying, I'm sorry, but this is beyond you. Right? This is not something you are going to be able to figure out or going to be able to grasp. It's like, did you ever try and get into an argument with a 3-year-old? You can't win. If you've ever tried it, okay? You don't win. All right? I mean, at least you'll come back to because I said so. Right, which you already know is not winning. Okay, it's kind of falling back on my last reserve. All right, and so getting into an argument with your ego is pretty much like that. So I just say stop. We don't have to go there. Your manifestations finally are what matter. Your belief, as it is grounded in your knowing, will be the rock that you stand on, and that rock is the rock of truth. You must stay in your truth, and we do not wish you to bypass your own knowing for ours. We simply instruct and we teach the methods that we are allowed to bring forth to you at this time, at this stage of planetary evolution. So it's not like saying, oh, that's what the guide said, so I need to be in my knowing about that. That's nice. But that's like what the mind does. The mind's always one step ahead of our spirituality. It's saying, okay, well, you're here, but you need to be over there. It never stops to embrace the truth of where I see myself or where I perceive myself at this particular moment. It's always jumping up there somehow or another. Right? And of course, I'm not there yet. But then I start thinking, well, I'm supposed to be, or I should be. And then I get caught up in that one. Not that it would ever happen to you, but then I get caught up in that one. Okay. And now I'm nowhere near embracing the truth of where I am at this moment. I'm into a lot of shoulds and a lot of have-dos and a lot of don't-haves and a lot of something's wrong with me. You can have a little anchor for yourself if you want to, of saying to myself, now what is an aspect of my knowing that really clicks in for me? Okay? And it could be knowing that I am loved, or knowing that I am nurtured, or whatever it might happen to be. And kind of allow that to be sort of your little mantra, your little anchor, that every time you sort of lose touch with the truth of who you are, you come back to that one. It's kind of a knowing that absolutely nothing can take away from you. Okay? We all have one of those, or at least probably more than one. But just be aware of one of them and say, I will let that be my anchor right now, especially in time of turmoil or difficulty or problems or something like that. That will be my anchor. That will be the one I come back to that will reinforce the truth of my knowing. Okay, so just kind of have one of those or a couple of those handy for yourself. Kind of like having the Serenity Prayer handy or something like that. But this is even more deeply ingrained in each one of us. This is more a manifestation or an anchor of our own particular knowing. Does anybody have any questions on that or anything you want to explore about that before we move on to the next piece? Because this is going to dive in even a little bit more deeply. Much has been said in this text about the transition that is coming forth. And what is happening really is the dimensions are shifting, or in fact, you are shifting in your own dimensional experience. And what this means is that your life on this plane will become malleable, flexible, moldable, to another set of experiences that will be made available to you as this shift transforms on your plane. We are used to, I'm gonna head into where no person has gone before, or at least where I haven't gone before anyway. We are all used to looking at or perceiving ourselves and the world around us in three-dimensional consciousness. And I mean, that's kind of a given. We kind of accept that one. All right. One of the possibilities that exists that we've already explored somewhat is that there is also a what we might call a fourth dimension of time and space, which we also travel through, but we don't necessarily do it that consciously. But what if we began to realize that what we call the material world is mostly empty space, which it is, and that what we call matter is simply a very dense vibration of molecules and atoms that feel very solid, and that there are other vibrations that are much more, you can move through much more readily, are not as dense. If we began to realize that we can go beyond the material layer or level of time, that if I think of, we talked about this in probably a couple of months ago. One of the ways we did that years ago when we were doing, let's say, healing the inner child work, if you were ever involved in something like that, what people were doing without even realizing it is we were really transmuting or going beyond this definition of time that we were in and saying, no, you can go back and heal yourself. What was the expression we used? It's never too late to have a happy childhood. Okay? And that wasn't just hype. Maybe for some people it was. Right? But I really believe that was the truth. You know, it is possible to go beyond what we think are the barriers of time to healing. Same is true with the future. We create our future. Oh. Well, we already know that in some ways. But then the way the Course puts it is so powerfully done. When we bring the past into the present, we create a future just like our past. And I go, oh, that's what I've been doing. That's Groundhog Day, okay? That's when we keep making the same thing or doing the definition of insanity, doing the same thing, expecting different results. right? It's bringing the past into the present, creating a future just like our past. We have choices there. We have freedom.
Jerry?
Yeah?
There was something on NPR as I was driving last week about a man who was studying trees and the life of trees and how trees communicate with other trees and trees within their own species. And it was amazing, the stuff that they've documented and how trees over hundreds and hundreds of years pass their learning onto their offspring. Mm. And how, like, beech trees can't live next to something else because they're kind of adversaries. And it will go under that tree's roots to get it out of the way because it's not healthy for it. And it was really I think it was called The Life of a Tree, and it was written by a Scandinavian researcher. But it was, when you said another dimension, I thought that's a dimension that we don't see and most of us don't even acknowledge, mm-hmm. unless we're really thinking about it, that it even exists, that these plants are talking to one another through pheromones or whatever they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
that's something we're doing at the same time.
And so you weren't really watching The Hobbit again, right? This was this wasn't Treebeard, the ants. Okay, this was real. Well, you know, we do know that. Again, we're so limited sometimes in our thinking. This is what I know. Of course, that's the material mind knowing, and here's this dimension. This whole other dimension of living beings communicating with one another, which, you know, shouldn't be surprising.
Right? One thing I'll pass on that I didn't know because I've done it is that you should never trim your trees in the winter because they're sleeping, and mm-hmm. then you jar them awake. That you should always trim them when they're awake.
Yeah, when the sap is just beginning to run, yeah. Right?
I guess a whole winter.
See, it's like this here. Okay, the attack of the killer tomatoes. That's just an example. There is so much more that we do not allow ourselves to be privy to because we say, "Oh, that doesn't make sense." Of course, it doesn't make sense to my limited mind. It's interesting, you know, Einstein, who was, obviously one of the most powerful scientists and thinking minds of the 20th century, was also somewhat of a mystic. And that most of his discoveries came not from straight mathematical proofs, right, but from an inner instinct or an inner kind of awareness that eventually manifested itself in something that could be looked at or analyzed or dissected as a mathematical truth. But there was something deeper going on there. Now, it is not as if a door opens and you walk through it into another realm. In fact, the other realm has always been coexisting with you. And all that is really happening here is that those bindings that have kept you tethered to lower frequency and those beliefs that have held you on this level of experience are being transformed to permit you to see, as it were, to experience what we now speak of in consciousness. To expand consciousness is, in fact, to move dimensionally. And as your consciousness is expanded, what becomes available to you on informational levels is transformed. You no longer look to physical matter to give you the proof of a question. You actually access the information in the higher frequencies and bring them to you. Without getting too far out about that, the example I thought of with this was, and I'll use myself as an example here if you don't mind, was when I was very deeply into my own addictions, or even when I first got involved in my own addictions, I really thought that the state of mind and the state of consciousness that was produced by the chemicals I was putting in my body, right, were really making my life livable. In some ways allowed me to be who I really wanted to be. And once I entered into that particular state of consciousness, there was nothing really that could shake that. That was my truth. I didn't realize that I was living in an illusion, but I was. Unfortunately, by the time you realize you're living in an illusion, the illusion has such a hold on me that it's kind of hard to break or get rid of. Right? Once I quit, once I surrendered, once I let go, once I became chemically free, I really thought that those dimensions that were open to me by the drugs that I was using, including alcohol, were never going to be available to me. I was just going to be in this rather bland, somewhat hopeless, bloop, 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 bloop kind of existence. And so as I look back on that, it was absolutely amazing, I think through spiritual practice and through prayer, through lots of other things and through the help of other people, that those dimensions of reality were opened up to me again, but in a way that was not toxic. So all of the things that I wanted to do and do well of, let's say, public speaking or photography or write poetry or all of this other stuff that I only thought I could do in this chemically induced altered state of consciousness, I didn't think were available to me. That dimension was not available to me any longer. It would not be there. And yet it was. It was there, obviously, it was there all. Those things were there all the time. I did not know that. I was not aware of that one. And so if we can use that as a little bit of a metaphor or analogy here, of saying, here I am sitting in this kind of defined dimension that I'm living in right now. Okay? And we don't even recognize most of what we're defining, but here we are. Okay? And saying that, wait a minute, all of those other things, all of the things that are talked about in this book, not just psychic energy, all right, but the energy that goes beyond physical matter, the energy that goes beyond my body, beyond my mind, beyond my emotions, the energy that allows me even to have a peek of you and me being a divine child of God, being in divine resonance. All of those things are available to us. It's what Jesus was expressing when he said, greater things than this shall you do. And the reason for that is those vibrations, those frequencies, are not something you are going to manifest. They're already here. You know, it'd be like walking around with a lamp and a plug in my hand, waiting for the light to go on. Well, the electricity is already here, but you got to plug into it first. Huh? Oh, didn't know that. See, I was waiting for the miracle that I thought the way it was supposed to happen. The miracle here is electricity is right in the wall, and I can't explain that either, all right? But all I got to do is plug it in. Oh. Well, nobody told me that. If you can remember, prior to the internet, it's amazing how the guides have caught up with, you know, in the first book they said something about a stenography machine. Oh, a dictaphone, that's what they said. They were talking about a dictaphone, you know, obviously, which was long time ago, okay?
Yes.
And it was very, so it's kind of interesting to see how quickly, nice going guys.
Okay.
If you can remember prior to the internet, the amount of time it took to look something up, you can see that the internet in many ways was a precursor to the idea that people could exist out of body and in consciousness. When you are on a telephone, you are still very much anchored into a physical reality. But the advent of the telephone transformed people as well, transformed the means of communication. Now, in a way, that's kind of, you know, it's kind of sad because now, you know, I can think of somebody in California that I know and love in California that I can be with them. Not on a physical plane, but on an awareness plane, right? But then I want to, well, I better call them up and see if they're really whatever I think they are. So what we are telling you now is that this next shift in conscious awareness is the next level and the next stage of your evolution as a planet. You have relied on the physical form to do much of your work for you in terms of conference, in terms of action, in terms of what is expected of you. And of course, we are not telling you that you are abandoning physical form. You are expanding form. And as you bypass the requirements of the physical, your experience is transformed and your beliefs will begin to change. Once you understand that matter is frequency and that everything can be transformed in consciousness, you begin to realign the requirements for your daily life. And the choices that you make are chosen anew in this new awareness. So let's suppose you are a list maker. Anybody a list maker? You make a list at night, in the morning. Okay, I do too. And let's suppose that one of the things on my list is clean the bathroom. Or clean the bathrooms. Okay. Don't want to do that. It's on my list. Now there are any number of planes of existence I can be in cleaning the bathroom. I can be disgruntled, annoyed, angry that I have to do this or need to do this. Is, you know, why don't I have enough money to call Mary Maids in or whatever the hell is going on in my mind? Or I can say to myself, how can I make this into an act of love? How can I do this lovingly? Because I can. You know, my favorite example from Thich Nhat Hanh, which I know I've probably worn out, but which keeps coming back to me, is when you're doing the dishes, imagine that each dish is a little baby Buddha. And so when I do that, I'm not just going, rah, rah. This is a sacred act. I am holding this dish as I would a little child. Not just any little child, but a little baby Buddha. Now I'm doing exactly the same thing. I'm cleaning the toilet or I'm washing the dishes. But I'm doing it in a whole other dimensional form of thinking. And how, see, notice how that changes everything. So it's not denying or saying, well, you know, I'm in a very high state of reality now. I don't need to clean the toilets anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay. Oh, really? Okay. You know what's going to happen after that, okay? So it's not about that at all. It's saying, oh, I am in a higher state of reality. Let me do this piece of karma, this piece of work that is in front of me. Let me do that as lovingly as I possibly can. What a difference that makes. So again, the external world is still the external world. But the way I'm relating to it is so totally different. Who would have thought my toilet is now an altar?
It was a throne before.
At least for a while, okay? So again, we're not denying what we see or what we perceive or even interacting with the external world. But how I do that, how I relate to that, is an absolute choice we have, and certainly one of the ways we can raise that vibrational level. Once you understand, oh, I did that already, sorry. Now we delight in our teachings with you, and we have things to discuss with you today about romance, and about fear, and about the bodies you stand in. And this is a little talk about self-justification and adherence to paradigms that have pre-existed this lifetime. Each one of you in this lifetime has made engagements with other people that you have mutually agreed upon that were actually made prior to incarnation. I've decided who my teachers are going to be. Now that doesn't mean you have to, you know, put them on a podium or put them on a pedestal. They might be my teacher in saying, I don't need to be with this person. Thank you for teaching me. I don't need to be near you. Okay? So, you know, don't fall into the trap of saying, well, I created this relationship, so I'm going to have to see it through to the end. I might have created this relationship to realize I don't need it anymore. Can you get that? Okay? So, you know, try not to figure that one out. In the East, there's something, I'm sorry, I'm going to be repeating myself a little bit, but I'm here for a purpose anyway. In the East, there's something they call karma yoga. There are any different forms of yoga. Yoga simply means union. Union with God, union with the divine. And there are various ways of accomplishing that, various spiritual paths that can accomplish that. Probably here in the West, we're most familiar with the physical form, hatha yoga, which has a lot to do with the physical body, but really, it's in a sense, it's bypassing that in some ways. But there's also something in the East called karma yoga, which simply means taking whatever shows up for you in your life as being an aspect of your spiritual path right now. You don't have to go get a new guru, you don't have to get a new book, you don't have to go to a new workshop. You just deal with whatever shows up for you and say, oh, that's my learning today, or that's my learning for these 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Whatever that happens to be, and I go, oh, okay. How can I make that, or how can I look at that, or how can I work with that in a spiritual sort of way? And so we do that, and then we do it with the next thing that shows up, and the next thing that shows up, and the next thing that shows up. We don't have to create anything new around that. It's just dealing with whatever comes or whatever shows up for us in our lives as being an aspect or part of our spiritual path that we have created for ourselves. Not as a roadblock, not as something that's painful. But recognizing, you know, it's so easy to get into blame and shame and guilt and all kinds of other stuff with this, but recognizing, you know, I created this not to beat myself up, I created this to learn from. And one of the things I might be learning from this is to let it go. Okay? Immediately. As soon as I recognize it shows up, and as soon as I recognize it's toxic in my knowing, I say, oh, that's my learning is to let go of this. Not to figure it out. Not say, how do I let that person in my life? What an idiot I am. Blah, 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 blah. Stop. What I'm being asked to do is release that, to let it go.
Sometimes it takes 24 years.
Sometimes it does. Okay. You know, Bill and I were reflecting on that the other night, about sometimes how long it takes us to learn a particular lesson. Okay. You know, how long does it take? It takes as long as it takes. And that's not a judgment. That's an awareness. There are some people that seem to get it easier than others or quicker than others. I'm sure they got other lessons that I would be not very appreciative of. So just what shows up for you. Each one of us in this lifetime has made engagements with other people that you have mutually agreed upon that were actually made prior to incarnation. I must say, I haven't said this in a while, so I'll say this again. You know, they tell us a lot that when we are attracted to another person, a loving relationship, that there is something inside of you or something inside of us that creates that relationship with that other loving person. And I am very thankful for that. I have yet to find out what it is in me that has attracted Margot. But I'm really glad that there was something there, okay? Because I really believe that's true. This book, in fact, was contracted prior to Paul's inhabiting this form. Isn't that interesting? Before Abraham came to be, I am, okay? Before there was physical form, before you became attached to one of the patriarchs, right? Or the physical form of one of the patriarchs, I existed. I knew your face before you were born. He knew it, but he didn't know it for real until it started coming through. And then it was a memory of understanding, and the pieces of the puzzle made sense. You each have things in your life like this, and you also have engagements with others that you have brokered on a higher level. Some of these have been in business, some of them have been in love, some of them have been the most painful experiences that you have undertaken. If you understand, first of all, that when you come here to learn. And when you come here, you have unfinished business from previous incarnations. You can quite simply begin to understand that as you move through this life, you will have recurrent patterns and relationships that are provocative and are meant to really simply to move you out of your comfort zone and into a new level of awareness. Now, again, we can take that as being a negative, like moving out of your comfort zone. But in reality, you know, we cannot really manifest those higher stages of vibration until we realize the lower stages no longer serve us. And the lower stages, we have taught ourselves, are very comfortable and nice and warm and fuzzy and all kinds of other good stuff, and keep us safe on some level. And so maybe even negating the idea of comfort zone is stepping out of our safety zone to realize that there is something more that's there. Walking in here every Sunday morning, you know, I really congratulate you for that, because you know you're going to be challenged, okay? You know there's going to be some stuff that's going to come up for you that you might not really want to take a look at. You know, Scott Peck said, you know, so often he said we think our spiritual experiences ought to be oh joy experiences. He said many times they're oh shit experiences, right? And so many times, you know, when we put ourselves in a challenging situation, there's stuff that's going to come up that we say, I mean, it happens to me every week. I don't know about you. I wish I didn't say that. Right? I wish I hadn't said that one. Because once you say it, okay, it's out there. Okay, it's not, you can't pull that back and pretend it wasn't there. Right? It's not like a fish you throw back in the water. Okay, you caught it. Right, it's yours. So that happens all the time. And what we are doing, what we are saying, we're putting a different kind of language on that. What we are saying is that we are opening ourselves to be. Or to allow ourselves to be at a higher level of vibration, to work with whatever it is that shows up in our lives. And that means our perception of things, including ourselves, is going to be different. It has to be. Right? My perception of the dishes or doing the dishes is different. My perception of cleaning a toilet is different. My perception of this person is different. I said, oh, that person showed up in my life because dot, dot, dot. I mean, as we said last week, we live in marvelous times here. Because if you think you're really nice and warm and fuzzy and holy, right,
all you got to do is turn on the TV or pick up the newspaper, right? And I'm immediately back in judgment. Immediately back in comparison, immediately back into one of those separateness trips. I go, oops. Thank you. Thank you for teaching me that again. How often am I going to, we have, I believe, as a society, we have created icons that are continually teaching us that lesson that we didn't learn gradually. Now I'm going to be right in your face. And you're going to realize that you're either going to learn this one, or it's going to be really, really painful. Or continue to be really, really painful. Your choice. I got to get back upstairs and rinse. So let's just take a minute. Close your eyes, take a couple of breaths. And let's just be grateful. Let's just be in gratitude. Let's just be in love. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you all for your time, your treasure, your generosity, your healing power, your healing energy, for being here for each one of us, for one another. That we are truly, as Ram Dass said, we are walking one another home. Thank you.
I need to tell you, this morning I was waiting for a long time. Early in the morning, 4 or 5 o'clock. I finally got back to sleep. I started saying, turn right.
Do you want me to take your thing, Jerry?
Yes, please. Let me turn it on.